You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the new Himalaya podcast app, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. You can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and me on Twitter and Facebook at Chris W. Manning. That is a change, just kind of updating my Twitter handle for the modern times because I'm different than when I made that Twitter handle. Today's show is a mailbag show, so all of your questions answered. Got a ton of great ones. Three segments worth of questions in the future. If you want to submit them, here's how. Twitter at Locked On Cavs, Google Voice. You can submit them there to our Google Voice number, which is 440-207-0924. LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And you can do them on r/ClevelandCavs as well. Okay, first question comes from Reddit, from Never Stop Dunking. He or she or Zay asks, what prospects do you like with the Rockets pick? So currently, so people know, the pick the Cavs are getting from the Houston Rockets from the trade deadline deal is going to convey in the late 20s. As I record this, it's 10:22 p.m. on April 2nd. That pick is slotted in at tied for 24th at 26 overall with Philly, Portland, Houston all tied. Houston has 49 wins. It could go back as far as, let's say, 27 if they are able to pass the Denver Nuggets before the end of the season. Further back than that would be surprising, but this is going to be a later first-round pick. It was as high as 22, 23. So just so that's where we're thinking this is going to be. So if you're looking at guys like PJ Washington, Grant Williams, those are guys you would hope slide back. It is not likely, I think, they slide back that far. We're looking at later first-round guys. A couple guys that I am interested in at the current moment, I like Iggy Bradikas from Michigan. He's a small forward. He's a freshman. He's very fun. He's got a fun personality based on what I've seen from him. 6'7", 6'9", wingspan, 223. This is a guy who's going to be able to space the floor. He's going to be able to slash. He's going to be able to be a versatile defender if things work out for him correctly. I'm a big fan of Iggy. He is a really good scorer. He's not a super big athlete, but he could be a rotation wing in the NBA. The Cavs need guys like that. I am a fan of Iggy. He'd probably kind of be my top guy in that spot right now. And you look at Matias Thybulle. Thybulle is a senior. He is a havoc machine, as Trevor Magnotti puts it in his latest big board. And he's a guy who is a disruptor despite him being a player in a 2-3 zone. He's actually playing free safety in the Washington zone. He's someone who is able to roam and make all these casts, and all the data points and all the film we have on him suggest he's going to be a good NBA role player. He's a little bit older, so we'll have to see if he can hit threes, but I love Matias Thybulle. 6'5", has just sort of everything you would want from a modern NBA wing if things hit well for him. It's that 7-foot wingspan. I'm just all the way in on him if they could pick him in the late first round. And one other guy that I would say stands out, especially if the Cavs do slide back a little bit farther, is Josh Reeves from Penn State. He's a shooting guard. If you're noticing a trend here, it's that the Cavs should be looking at guards. He's a guy that would just sort of, I think, fit the type of position the Cavs really should be looking at in terms of wings. Reeves is progressing as a three-point shooter. He's someone who isn't gonna maybe be someone who is going to maybe rise up these draft boards, like, let's say, Thibault might or Iggy Brzezinski might, but he's someone in that range. Basically, if you want to look at guys that would make sense for the Cavs, it's the wings to me, the potential 3-and-D guys or light 3-and-D guys that are going to be available late in the first round. You know, you maybe if Keldon Johnson slips, that would be great. If Nasir Little slips, you take him in a second. Davidas Sirvydis, who I'm definitely mispronouncing his name, from Lithuania, could be an option there as well. There's a bunch of guys, but they're going to have their maybe some pick of wings. Nickeil Alexander-Walker from Virginia Tech is another. But I'm looking at wings, and I'm only really looking at wings at that spot. If a value big or a value guard slides that far, you look at that guy a bit hard. But if I think you're looking at wing, and currently I like Iggy Brzezinski, I like Matthias Thybul and some of these other guys. But that's where I'm at. It's wings over everything for me. Next question comes from Cavs Greg BR, who you've heard on the show before, Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. He asks, what's your favorite Channing Frye interaction moment / story? So Channing Frye is obviously retiring. He just gave a great Q&A to Joe Varden of The Athletic. And I'm going to give two answers to this. So I think my favorite Channing Frye quote is actually from this Q&A. It's maybe my favorite piece Varden's done all year on this team. Here's the Channing Frye quote. It was a very good Q&A. You can find the link to in the show notes. This is what he said how he'd like to be remembered. This is part of his answer. Quote, listen, I'm rich. I'm a champion. I'm 35 and retiring, and I'm living a great life. So if you think I suck, I'll see you at LA Fitness in a year, motherfucker. Well, God bless Channing Frye, cutting loose, having fun with everything he's doing right now. For me, my favorite Channing Frye experience, you know, I think you could look at him being with the Cavs and sort of being a key part in the locker room, a key part in everything they were doing, a key part in... really the team winning a title. You know, if they don't lose, if they don't get him, I don't know if they win a title. I think if you're looking at his best game and maybe the most fun game of the Channing Frye era that I think will stand out, it's got to be the 27.7-9 from three win over the Atlanta Hawks in 2016. That was like the quintessential Channing Frye game. He was just super, super great in that game, bombed a ton of threes. His impact was probably never more felt than that. But I think it's a combination of just his personality, just a really nice guy. Every time I talk to him, mostly in a scrum, but one or two times, just quick questions after games, I've found him very open and honest, and I really do appreciate that in Channing. He is just a really good dude, it seems like, from everything. I know the Road Trip podcast is obviously great. That quote from Varden is great, but I think if you're looking at an on-court moment, it's got to be the threes he bombed and just him being part of that title team. Again, I don't think the Cavs win in 2016 if they don't get him. He was that essential to the locker room. Jackie Mack from ESPN, the great Jackie McMullen, wrote a piece about that, and I think just supports that idea even more. Next question comes from @bnagel81. He asks, are there any deals, teams, / players you target with the JR contract this summer? How realistic should my expectations be as far as cashing that in? This is a very, I think, complicated question. So J.R. Smith, if you don't know, has a small guarantee on his deal for next season. It is all but assured he's not going to be on the Cavs next year. It would be a crazy, crazy scenario if he were to be on the Cavs next year. They're not going to pay him almost $16 million next year. He's dead money now. Basically, the two broad outcomes for JR here are they cut him before the start of free agency. So that's like June 30th, I think, his contract is guaranteed. They eat like $3 million, and they just move on. JR gets to theoretically sign with another team. The other option is that the Cavs could trade him, in combination with someone else on the roster, let's say like Tristan or John Henson, or just on his own, to a team that wants to clear cap space. Now, I think the obvious candidates are the teams like, maybe Detroit you could look at. Like, John, if they want to clear a little bit of money, like John Luehr could be someone that you might flip him for and just get a pick back of some kind. Maybe Charlotte wants to flip someone. Maybe, You know, you look at the Heat. They have a bunch of guys under contract that they certainly want to create some flexibility. Maybe Orlando. Like, you look at teams that don't have a lot of money and would like to shed some money and maybe use some extra cap space to spend in free agency. Those are the teams you're looking at. I don't think you're going to get a great value back for J.R. Smith. It's not going to be something where you're getting a significant pick back. I would be surprised if you could get a first. I think like a second is sort of the realistic path there. I don't, you know, it seems to me a very possible, I don't want to say like, I don't really have enough intel on this to really know, but I think the Cavs should be in a position where I think the best way to use it is to be to trade him and get whatever you can and not, and just worry about, you know, collecting assets, collecting picks, collecting a young player who maybe just needs a new situation to maybe get a chance to maximize themselves. So I think draft night is sort of going to be a time this could be really active. I don't, you know, I think it seems possible. It depends on what teams are really going to try to make some sort of move in free agency. It's a little too early for us to know that. The playoffs certainly could impact the market. If a team feels like it needs an extra $6 million or something, or $12 million that they would save from JR, just whatever amount of money they can clear by getting him, maybe that team becomes available and we don't know that yet. And that happens on draft night because they feel like they need that extra flexibility. We don't know. And we don't know what the Cavs are willing to do there. The funnest example, and a hot tip to Jeff Siegel for coming up with this, that I think would be wild, although this is a situation I don't believe would happen. If the Miami Heat really wanted to do something to save some money next year, they could save about $8 million if they traded Hassan Whiteside, who has a player option for next year, for Tristan Thompson and for J.R. Smith. The Cavs then, you know, could eat the Whiteside money. They could play him, I guess. They could do whatever. And they could also, like, the Heat could give up their first-round pick this year, which, if you're looking at the draft, is currently slotted in at number 15 overall. It could be a back end of the lottery pick. That's probably too much value for Miami to give up. I would be surprised if they gave up, especially a lottery pick. But if they wanted to save some money and clear the way for Bam Adebayo to start, the Cavs could do something like that. That's like the craziest idea. I don't think anything like Dante Exum, who, like, if the Jazz wanted to clear some money, or like any player with real upside, is not really going to be gettable for JR. But if you can get some kind of asset for him, I think that's the way you go, and then you see what you can do with it. But it's also possible, I think, the Cavs do just cut him and save the money, and the JR Smith era in Cleveland ends rather unceremoniously and not really offering, you know, the Cavs anything in return for JR, like, sitting out all year. And hopefully, and I think JR, for his sake, I hope he gets a shot to play summer next year. I like to see JR back in the league. It's a more fun league when he's around. We're going to take a quick break, but remember to get the show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Cavs on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features that debut every day. Download Himalaya in your app store and subscribe to Locked On Cavs. And again, when you're in your car or at home, tell your smart device, play podcast Locked On Cavs, and it'll play that show for you. We'll be right back and with more of your questions. Today's podcast is brought to you by Wyze, the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allow you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD, images so clear you won't miss a thing, night vision, and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone. Check your home from anywhere with Wyze's app live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. If you go away for a couple hours and you have to run some errands, you can do things like making sure your food's sitting around the stove for a couple hours, keeps going and isn't boiling over while you're away. You can watch your plants grow through a time lapse. Or if you have a pet and you want to make sure your dog is doing okay and you have to leave for a couple hours, you can check in on it with Wyze. And if you want more, they have that too. For just $10 more, WISE's Can Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast, so your camera should too. You can patrol your room with PanScan and set the camera's patrol route up to 4 custom waypoints. This works with Alexa, and it has free rolling 14-day cloud storage. So go to WISE.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Go check out WISE today at WISE.com. That is WYZE.com/locked. Okay, we are back with more of your mailbag questions. First one comes from Fizzy G Swag on Reddit. What do you think Colin Sexton's floor and ceiling is? So we'll talk about this a bunch more on the end of the season show. And then on the Colin Sexton season review show, we're going to do Jordan Zerm is already booked as the guest for that. So you'll definitely want to tune in for that podcast. But I'll say this. I think the best version of Colin Sexton, based on what we've seen this season, is a modified version of George Hill. It's a George Hill that is more offensive oriented. It's a George Hill that is maybe plays a bit faster. Also, not as good defensively. Also, not as good as a passer. It's a George Hill that is certainly more offensive oriented, a bit smaller. So just talk about like a mutant version of George Hill, basically, that is just limited in ways that George Hill is not, and then maybe has advantages over what George Hill is. That's not, you know, maybe that's kind of a weird answer, but I don't quite know what to make of Colin Sexton right now. I think the passing numbers mean it's hard to compare him to De'Aaron Fox. The speed is really the thing that links them there. I think if you're looking at his floor, the guy that I keep coming back to for some reason, and I don't feel great about saying this, is Reggie Jackson. I'm not the biggest Reggie Jackson guy. He can get buckets. He was also just kind of like a weird lead guard for Detroit and just kind of is what he is. He's not like a bad player by any means, but it's not like a championship winning point guard guy. So that's maybe like the that type of guy seems to me like what at the basin level what Sexton's going to be. Maybe it's a bit worse than that. I think, you know, Dennis Schroeder type that's kind of inefficient is maybe like the type of thing that could be in play for him too. So I think like a modified offensive version of George Hill is sort of his ceiling, and maybe something like Reggie Jackson, Dennis Schroeder is his floor. Those are broad things. We're going to get into that more with Jordan. But that's just where I'm at with Colin right now. Without having done like a big season review, tape breakdown, stats breakdown, all that stuff, talking to him and the team and everything like that. I just kind of want to see what they would say as well. But he's kind of a fascinating player based on what he is. And I think his floor and his ceiling are going to be really interesting things to define. So Fizzy G Swag, great question. So Kane P96 on r/Cavs asks a question that I think will be a pretty quick answer. So, hello. This summer is pretty huge for free agents as well. Is Cleveland in any way an enticing spot for a superstar to land? Let's answer this question assuming we, in terms of the Cavs, get a top 3 pick in the draft, pick Zion, RJ, or Morant. If not, what type of player would be enticed to sign with the Cavs this summer? Also, would getting the top pick and drafting Zion matter much to free agents? So, there's no way the Cavs are getting a superstar. KD, any of those guys are not coming. I don't know to answer the last question here, though, because this is kind of 3 questions in one. I do not know really how much free agents will be swayed by rookies. You know, it could be an agency connection thing. Zion would be the one that maybe a vet would want to play with. There could be some appeal to a certain type of veteran. Of course, they're also going to be looking for money. The Cavs are not going to have a ton of that. For me, I think the Cavs are going to be in a position sort of like they were last summer where they're not going to be able to go out and throw extra money at guys that they believe can be part of the core, assuming they don't just somehow magically clear a bunch of cap space. They're going to be looking at free agents who are going to be coming in a little bit below market value, who are going to be guys that maybe don't quite fit where they were coming from, or just have some kind of wart or maybe just some upside that has to get mined, and that's why they're just kind of chilling on the free agent market. That's where I think what we're sort of looking at here. So you're not going to get like a top 10 free agent. You're not going to get a top, let's say, 25 free agent. Like, I think if you're the Cavs, you're, I think, looking at guys that are a little bit lower down the list. You're looking at guys, throw out some names that are sort of like in the middle tier free agency. I think you're looking at, you're looking at guys like maybe if Marvin Williams hits the market, like he's kind of a floor spacing four guy who could help you in defense and maybe fill some 3 minutes. What does Jeremy Lamb's agent, kind of market look like? What does Reggie Bullock's market look like? What does a guy like lower down the list like? Jeff, like maybe you could bring back Jeff Green. Like, you're looking at guys that are just like lower down the list, aren't going to have a ton of bidders necessarily. If the Cavs already had the experience, like Rodney Hood type free agents are sort of the guy, the market of what you're looking for. Guys lower down the totem pole, guys that are maybe flawed in some way, don't have a ton of value from the teams they're coming from, and guys maybe you can hope you can develop into something. David Nwaba is actually sort of a good indication of the type of guy. It's a guy that maybe doesn't have the biggest market, but you can get on a lower than expected contract, even if it's for a short amount of time, and then you see what becomes of that. That's kind of the framework we're looking at. The Cavs are not going to be major free agent players this summer, even if they had cap space, which they will not. That would not be the case, in my opinion. That guy at work on r/Cavs asks, I'm assuming LeBron has a no trade clause, but if the Lakers decide their best move is to trade LeBron for a quick restructuring and the Cavs are able to somehow draft Zion, would you make the Zion or substitute for Ja or RJ Barrett and then some for LeBron? Personally, I wouldn't even consider it. Love LeBron, but he made it clear he wanted to pursue other endeavors and Zion's ceiling is too high. Just an interesting question. I'm going to say no. I would not, and that's, LeBron's the GOAT. He will mean more to Cleveland than any player ever because he won a title for the city. He's the guy responsible for that. But if you're the Cavs, you have to move on at some point. If LeBron wants to come back in 4 years and play like his last year with the Cavs and be part of whatever the team looks like at that point, that's one thing. But if he wants to just like come back, or if the Cavs wanted to like try to rebuild and contend with him now, that would just be a weird. I think it's in the best interest of both parties based on how it ended. And for the Cavs to just try and move on and be functional. This is a franchise that has not made the playoffs without LeBron on its roster in like 20 years. Let's see them be competent. Let's see them do something that is beyond LeBron and build something. I think for the long-term health and functionality of the franchise, it would not make sense to like flip Zion or any young stud who you have more control over, who you can build around for the next decade if everything goes right for LeBron, who left above his own accord. That's just a weird thing. I don't really think, frankly, that's like an interesting question. I don't think you trade for LeBron or for the Cavs at this point. Let's just move. I think it's healthy for everyone just to move on and like acknowledge the good times, celebrate the title in 2026 and any, whenever you want, but just move on. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back with two more questions for today's show. Again, you can subscribe to Locked On Cavs on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, the new Himalaya podcast app. Mailbag questions for a future mailbag, go to lockedoncavs@gmail.com, Google Voice, Twitter, wherever else you want to submit them if you want to contact me. I'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs, so stay tuned. All right, last part of today's show. This one comes from my dad, because my dad is a great guy and listens to the show. Thanks, Dad. He asked, if you're not getting Zion, who are the guys you would rank in terms of the guys you're most interested in? We're going to do a ton of this, so I'm going to keep this one sort of brief. But it's RJ Barrett, Jarrett Culver, Coby White is sort of my most interesting fits right now. The Ja Morant, Colin Sexton fit scares the crap out of me. I just don't really know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with what he is with in terms of Colin Sexton. I hope he flourishes. I think he's going to be really good. He's probably, I think, certainly a better prospect than Sexton. Don't love it. I think RJ certainly is the leader of the next guys. I think he could be really special. I think Culver just checks a bunch of boxes. I think Coby White could be the right kind of long-term backward fit next to Sexton if things go right for him. So those are the three guys for me right now. My taste in general for this draft is wings, shooters, guys who can move the ball. I want modern NBA players, and I'm prioritizing that, or guys you think you can make into that over everything else. That's not something I think is unique. I think a lot of teams are going to do that, but you know, that could be that is, I think, certainly sort of the thing you're hoping the Cavs do if you want to see them continue on a certain path towards functionality. Last question comes from Hiram Boyd via email. What are some Cavs coaching candidates you're interested in? This is paraphrasing his question. Some of the names that he listed included Jordy Fernandez, who is a Canton Charger coach, Nate Tibbetts, Alex Jensen, Jerry Stackhouse. So I think all of those names are interesting. Stackhouse looks like he might be going to Vanderbilt at the last time I looked into this, so that's kind of off the board. Here are the names I will just say. First, kind of run through interesting names, guys that to me could make sense based on what we know, that the Cavs want a younger coach who prioritizes player development, and that's where we're at. And we'll talk about Larry Drew quickly because I think he has some people I've seen on Twitter think he should stay. That's not going to happen, but we'll talk about that. Okay, Jordy Fernandez with the Denver Nuggets was the head coach of the Canton Charge, has, you know, connections to Mike Gansey, Kobe Altman, those guys, especially Mike Gansey, who used to run the Canton Charge as their GM. Fernandez is coming from Mike Malone's staff. Mike Malone has obviously done a great job at Denver. So he's coming from a under some tutelage from a well-known head coach, a guy that has connections back to Cleveland in his own right. I think he fits the bill. I don't know, you know, where he's at in terms of what his responsibility level is like in Denver. You know, it's hard to kind of tell what he sort of is going to be able to do next, like what his next sort of logical step is. He's only 36 years old. He is really just kind of starting out in his coaching career. I mean, if you look at his professional resume, he's not a guy that has like a ton of stuff. According to his Wikipedia page, this is his career history as a coach dating back to 2016. He was a coach at a basketball academy. He was the player development coach for the Cavs for 4 years. He's coached Spain. He was a U19 assistant in 2013. He was an assistant with the Charge, coached the Charge in 2014, 15, 16, and then since 2016 he's been with the Denver. He was on the staff for the 2016 title, so during sort of involved in that a little bit as well. Monte Morris, who is obviously a great backup point guard for Denver, certainly has spoken highly of him. Quote: he's all in about an all business guy. So like he has fans. He's credited to kind of helping develop Kyrie, Tristan, Deion, Dele, and other players. This is, according from Wikipedia, this is what Mike Gansey had to say about him. So maybe just keep this in mind. Quote, whoever walks through that door, Fernandez can relate to them. He's either watched it, lived it, or seen it. That's why he's so valuable. Maybe that is something the Cavs really, really value. He's a guy that has a background in academia. He has a degree in sports sciences, and he's apparently one article away from getting a PhD in sports psychology. So really interesting background, has the right sort of rough background, but I don't know if this is like when he's going to become head coach, but certainly I think on the list. Mark Price, well, he's also on the Denver staff, interviewed for the Cavs job before they hired David Blatt, was and has specialized in shooting and player development. Maybe he'll get an interview again. That's just speculation. Chris Finch comes from the New Orleans Pelicans staff. Chris Finch is a guy who is well regarded as one of the create like a really well-known creators of offense in the NBA right now. He is someone who has done a lot of work in terms of well-regarded as being an offensive mind in terms of dribble handoffs and developing offenses that are modern. He's currently the associate head coach under Alvin Gentry. If the Cavs wanted to go all in on a guy that can design like a really modern movement-oriented offensive system, Chris Finch would be a guy. He's 49 years old. He's from Cambridge, Ohio. That's in Southeast Ohio. So he's 49. He's done some player development work as well. Coached in the G League, has coached for the Rockets and the Nuggets and the Pelicans as well. Coached in Europe in addition to what he's done there. Played in Division III at Franklin and Marshall College. So he's a name that I think will be head coach someday. Don't 100% know if he's going to be the Cavs guy. We don't know if any of these guys are going to be them. But if you wanted like a guy who's going to come in and design like a really great offensive system, that's the guy. Luke Walton. So Luke Walton is almost certainly going to be fired by the Los Angeles Lakers. He obviously played for the Cavs. He obviously has the tutelage under Steve Kerr and being a very good coach of the Warriors. I don't think he's a bad coach. I know some will quibble with his rotations. I think that's a valid concern of Luke Walton, but I think you could do worse than him. He's got a really interesting look sort of how he evaluates life. He's a big fan of the Michael Gervais sort of thinking of sports science and mental awareness and being a guy who's you're being very in tune with the mental side of things. I don't think he's really been helped by the LeBron situation. I think you put him on the coach of a young team and let him develop. I think he could do some really good stuff. And I think the Cavs could do much, much worse than hiring Luke Walton were he to get fired and were he to be interested in taking the Cavs job, especially immediately after, you know, kind of having a job that was his dream job, it seemed like, kind of burn out in front of him. Chris Gent is the last kind of non-Larry Drew guy we're going to touch on. Chris Gent is a coach currently with the Atlanta Hawks. He coached the Bakersfield Jam. He's 49, from California, played at Ohio State. He was one of the guys originally that helped coach LeBron and helped work on LeBron's shooting. Starting in 2006, he was the assistant coach, director of player development with the Cavs. While LeBron was with the Cavs, for those that like half decade, he was LeBron's personal shooting coach. He coached under Thad Matta. He was the head of the Bakersfield Jam. Went back to Ohio State in 2015-16, and then since last year, he's been with Atlanta. Under Lloyd Pierce, and who's in his own right a player development guy. Gent's background has been very much in player development. He's got that G League experience, which is all about player development. I think he's someone that could be an interesting fit. I know he's done some work kind of designing the offense, or at least having some input on the offense in Atlanta. He's a guy that I think really could be an interesting hire. I don't know how much the Cavs are interested in him, but he's another guy that fits the mold, has the background of player development, being on the younger side of things and maybe being more linked to the modern game in some way. And Larry Drew, lastly, I'll just say, I think he's done a great job kind of keeping this group upbeat. They've played harder most of the time of late. The Suns game that you did not need to watch and should not go back and watch because it was not fun is sort of one of the only examples recently that hasn't been the case. I just don't think Drew is the right guy for Max. He's a guy that if you wanted to entrust a veteran coach to help your veteranish team maximize itself, I think he's that kind of guy. I don't think he's the guy to come and develop a bunch of young talent, be patient with young talent, and help kind of guide them along the way. That's just not what I think his strengths are as a coach. I think he's a strong leader. I think Kevin Love and Tristan, all these guys respect him. That's a huge, huge skill. I just don't think that's the direction they're going to go. As far as I know, and it's been reported by The Athletic as well, the Cavs have not spoken to him about any sort of contract. There's been no discussion from either side about a new deal. So this is sort of just, he's going to get to the end of the year, do his exit interview. Maybe he gets an interview for the head coaching job, but then adios, the Cavs will go find somebody else. So that's where we're at. My personal two top choices, I would say, I think Luke Walton would be really interesting, and I think Jordy Fernandez would be quite interesting. Chris Gent and Finch would be kind of next with Price and Anyone else sort of a bit lower. But we'll see who the Cavs eventually do get interested in. And I expect that process to really kind of get going very, very quickly at the end of the season. You know, David Blatt, if you want to go back to the last time the Cavs hired a coach in the summer, David Blatt was hired by the Cleveland Cavaliers on June 20th. The NBA draft is... that is June 20th this year. There's no way they're waiting that long. The Cavs, I think, are going to move much faster this time in getting a head coach. It would be shocking to me if this drags on like into late June or anything like that. That would be a bit bonkers. All right, so that is going to be it for today's show. I'll be back tomorrow getting into this, what to watch in this Kings game, as well as some tactics things we're seeing towards the end of the season. We don't yet know, again, right now what's going on with Kevin Love or some of the other injured Cavs right now, if they're going to play towards the end of the year, but only 4 games left in the season. Thanks again for submitting your questions to this mailbag. I really do appreciate it. You'll be able to, again, do that to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter, LockedOnCavs@gmail.com, Google Voice, or on r/ClevelandCavs. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts does guarantee that your question gets answered. You can find Locked On Cavs on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the new Himalaya podcast app, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Cavs. Find me on Twitter at Chris W. Manning and on Facebook at CWM Rights. So that's going to be it. Thank you again for listening to today's show. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for April 3rd, 2019. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday.